with your Microsoft SQL servers.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bytes, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified Administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the Teacher Education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconser, an Associate Professor of Education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current Special Education Support Volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the Special Education Department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Chuck Wolbers, your Education Matters host, and today we'll be talking about equine-facilitated learning, which is learning or educational processes that are accomplished through the use of a horse. My guest today is Stephanie Kubarth, who is the director of the Midwest Therapeutic Riding Program in Paris, Wisconsin. I'd like to begin by allowing her to describe her educational background and past professional experience with equine-facilitated therapy, which is specifically her application, equine-facilitated learning, or, again, this education that is accomplished using a horse can be done in a number of different capacities, either therapy, we see psychotherapy going on, personal development, and it's been used very, very effectively also with some of our veterans returning from overseas for social integration related therapies. And I'm going to let Stephanie continue at this point and tell us a little bit about her background and her journey in this direction.
Well, my background is I'm an occupational therapist, but first I was a horse person and saw what wonderful things happened when you combined specifically children with special needs and horses. It's just magical. So from that background, OT really helps incorporate so many things using the horse.
Okay. And obviously then education, since this is a show about education, because as we all understand, education matters. There's a hint, hint, wink, wink, smile there. But you obviously are involved in a tremendous amount of education professionally yourself. Describe a little bit about what an occupational therapist does from an educational standpoint and how that differs from physical therapy.
Occupational therapists, our goal is we work on activities of daily living. So that can be brushing your teeth, learning how to learn, adapting those type of things. You know, everything is a learning experience, from tying your shoes, brushing your teeth, combing your hair, just being able to get from the kitchen to the living room if you're non-ambulatory. We're a physical therapist, which are wonderful too, and there is a lot of overlap, but they work more, I would say, on gait. They use more modalities. They're going to work on the function of your legs working. So you get a lot of sports therapy. A lot of times our physical therapists, where we're working on, we want you independent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
The old adage, which isn't so true anymore, is PT works from the waist down, OT from the neck to the waist, and speech gets the head.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But it doesn't quite work that way anymore.
It's not quite that exclusive.
No, there's a lot of overlap. And what's best is when you can all work together.
Yes, absolutely. So there is a lot of integration between the different applications and professionals that would work with that. And that took my next plug because I thought, oh, so physical therapist or physical therapy, I've always heard is from the waist down, and from the waist up is occupational therapy. So that's, we're seeing that's a myth that we can blow apart, basically. And but the occupational therapy then, as you talked about the learning activities, which is a very, very specific and clear tie-in to what we're talking about in this show and the educational applications, in your program, for the benefit of the listening audience, what other educational activities do you involve yourself with and are education-related activities that ties into what the outcomes of occupational therapy are?
So with us, when we do the equine facilitated learning, we're working with children with special needs. Now, there are other programs that they don't have specifically special needs. But for us, we are working with the transition students, the 18 to 21-year-olds that are still in school. And they come to us, they learn stable management, which taking care of a horse. So we sneak in math skills real easily because, you know, if you can't apply it, like I know when I was in school, I couldn't stand geometry. I didn't see how it would ever benefit me. But if I could see how it would benefit me, then it makes it so much more interesting. So for the math skills, we're measuring horses. Horses are measured in hands. A hand is 4 inches. So we'd measure the horses with a ruler, big yardstick, and figure out how many inches. So let's say the horse was 40 inches tall, which is short. We would divide 40 by 4, and the horse would be 10 hands. So they had to do some adding, division. So then we measured them and figured out how tall they were. And so one boy was 16 and a half hands tall. So then we also put them in order, the largest to smallest, on the board. So, you know, for a lot of students, that's a hard concept. And the math, they were having fun with the math.
Aha, because they could see a personal application.
Right.
And there are also other barn or stable management applications. When you're feeding, at some point, someone's going to need not the whole bale of hay, but as it's broken down sometimes, it's called in a flake. It could be a flake or two. If someone needs a little less, someone's going to have to do some mathematics in their head, perhaps, to reduce or increase appropriately how much food a horse is supposed to have. It could even be the would a horse eat? The grain.
Grain. Sure. So working on grain, measuring that. Because, you know, a lot of times we have students that could have cerebral palsy, and it's really hard for them to pick up something and pour. And mom doesn't want them helping cook at home and measuring things because it's going to be a mess. Well, we're in a barn. We don't care. So, and then they can clean up afterwards. But they can measure that. So we've even made horse cookies. So we have to follow a recipe, and they get to stir and all that other stuff. Or sometimes horses need medication. We have to figure out how much medication they need. And it's really neat to see how the correlation, like, oh, the horse takes meds, I take meds. And how many cc's do you get of a med or compared to the horse? So there's some good analogies there, especially for the ones that don't want to take meds. And we'll say, well, look at the horse really doesn't like it either, but we know the horse needs to have this to make them better, let's say.
So they form, and often many of these students will form an emotional bond with the horse that is either specifically theirs or one that they're riding on a regular basis. And whereas sometimes their friends or their peers in school might not completely understand or appreciate their personal situation, they see a common relationship now with this horse that's actually helping them out and that they form a relationship with. And I learn something new every day, obviously, and I didn't make that connection right away, but I can see how important that is. One of the characteristics of the program also is that therapeutic though it is, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, it's also much more fun because it's nowhere near as structured where, first of all, you cannot duplicate what the horse is capable of doing in the clinical setting of a hospital, which is squeaky clean. Lots of protocols about being quiet, where you're supposed to walk, how you're supposed to walk, where you can park, and, oh, I didn't get my favorite place, and are we going to go to that McDonald's after we're done? There are a lot of distractions. So that often what we hear at your program, I can only surmise, is a lot of squealing and
good squeals.
Good squeals, correct. A lot of joyful expressions and an opportunity to truly experience being themselves, these students, without having to have a whole lot of other, as I said, protocols and behaviors thrust upon them and expectations that can be stifling.
Well, and I remember one student. He was from a school. He came from a very dysfunctional family. And he wrote a note to the horse that he got to work with. Thank you for loving me. You're the first thing that's ever loved me.
Oh, my. Oh, my. There must be a trove, a treasure trove of experiences like that for you to relate to. This has to be extremely rewarding.
My favorite one, we had a wedding in the barn. A horse and one of our riders.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He bonded with a horse and wanted to marry her. So long story short, we did have a wedding. And the bride wore a wedding dress. It was a fly sheet, so it looks kind of lacy with hot glued flowers across the front. And we had quite a few guests, and he wore his suit, and he got her a ring, and it was magical. And the difference between how he was before, I know it's going to sound crazy, how he was before he got married and after, even his mom's like, he's just so much more settled. This is a little boy, and you know he knows it's make-believe, but it just gave him that special bond with the horse.
But there's a paradigm of expectation, I guess, that he has at home where he sees a married couple, perhaps parents or others around him, or images on television. And now this is something that he can access that wasn't ever that important to him before.
Well, and he came out of foster care, you know, the foster system and things. And they've done research that's very interesting with a lot of these kids that have reactive attachment disorder. They have found horseback riding helps with that a lot, because when a baby's born, you know, the mom holds it and releases oxytocin. So it's all that holding, so the proprioception of that. So when a child is riding the horse,
the tactile reception.
You know, there's pressure all over their system. A lot of times, you know, we'll ride with a surcingle, they can ride backwards and they'll put their arms around the horse. Well, they found, they actually tested, it was a study in Germany, and they found that the children riding the horses were releasing oxytocin. They were bonding with their horse, which then carried over to bonding with their caretakers.
Aha. And this release was not evident in their previously dysfunctional environment, this result of institutional trauma, which is what results in the reactive attachment disorder. I wasn't aware of that. I'll talk with you offline sometime to get that research. It sounds incredibly interesting. Yes, yes. Well, now, you mentioned a surcingle, and that, for the benefit of the listening audience, is like a big strap that goes around the horse. Another term for it is a girth, and some of them have handles on them.
Right, so if they've ever been to a circus and saw somebody riding a horse in a circle doing tricks, that's a vaulting surcingle. So it's something similar like that.
Okay, and it's a specialized piece of equipment that assists the rider with being able to stay on the horse and be able to do a certain number of tasks. That's and we'll talk about this specifically, but these tasks are determined by you in the programming that the student is going to receive. So what kind of – is this – and I'll ask directly, is this therapeutic riding?
Okay, there's it gets confusing. So as you mentioned, there's equine facilitated learning.
And this therapy is – equine therapy or horse therapy is just a part of this – this overarching umbrella of learning and education.
No. It's different. The overarching one is equine facilitated activities.
Activities. Oh,
yes, it gets very confusing.
Okay.
And then there's equine facilitated therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's equine facilitated learning. There's equine facilitated psychotherapy. They're finding out horses really help a lot. But let's say equine facilitated therapy. So that would be what's considered hippotherapy.
Okay,
and hippo is Greek for horse.
For horse.
So hippotherapy is actually done by a therapist. It has to be an OT, PT, or speech therapist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're not using the horse. They're using the horse as the therapy tool. The child or adult is not learning to ride. Therapeutic riding, which some prefer to call adaptive riding.
Uh-huh.
I know another crazy term.
Another term,
but
right.
You'll typically hear therapeutic riding. That's done by a therapeutic riding instructor. They've had special training for people with disabilities and horses, and they are actually learning riding skills. But if you were to watch myself doing hippotherapy with a child and one of our instructors, it might look like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say holding reins. And for me, I might be having that child holding reins because they're working on upper extremity endurance, holding their hands up. Mm-hmm. That can be really hard. Grip strength, if they're tactile defensive, they don't like to touch certain things.
Oh.
Might be working on that. I might be working on directionality, left turn, right turn. The riding instructor is working on, they need to learn how to steer their horse.
They're controlling the horse. And the therapeutic outcomes are based on the objectives they have set for them in therapeutic riding to be able to get the horse from point A to point B and do a certain number of tasks. Whereas hippotherapy, the therapeutic outcomes are a result of the student or the patient accommodating the movements of the horse.
Right.
And so it's one is driven by the rider, basically, and the other is driven by the horse, but it's all centered around the horse. And I appreciate I like getting into the nitty-gritty and being as specific as possible, so the equine-facilitated activity is an even better framework to start from as far as the terminology is concerned. But so what drives the primary decisions for therapy for your students? And you mentioned the IEP before, so all of the students that have an IEP, they bring the IEP to you. And is that the first thing that you read, or do you read a doctor's report and say, oh, this student needs this, or just what?
You know,
The answer is yes.
yes and no, because you know what? A lot of times you read those things, and that's not who that is. And
aha. Mm-hmm.
From a medical standpoint, I want to make sure being on a horse isn't going to do anything that could harm the rider. Because it's not, you know, there are certain disabilities that it's contraindicated they shouldn't be riding if they have it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my number one concern. But you know what? I personally want to meet that child and talk to the parents, because sometimes it just, they can do so much more than most people give them credit for. So if I maybe read something and think, oh, wow, they can't do this or that or whatever, I don't want to have that in the back of my head, because doggone it, they all do far more than we ever give them credit for.
You can sometimes then fall into a situation where there's a preconceived notion.
Right.
And you're talking about the IEP or the doctor's report. Right? And it could be both.
It could be. The doctor's reports are usually just very cut and dry.
Okay.
You know, there's not a whole lot to it. The IEPs, but then, you know, two. And we always want to consult with the parent too. Mm-hmm. What is it that you want to see? And a lot of times we can also work on the same – we can incorporate what they're working in the IEP. We can do that on horseback. Now, there's, you know, of course, duplication of services. That
Correct.
Brings a whole other thing. But depending on their funding source, we might be able to definitely duplicate, layer more of that, what they're working on in school, also on the horse.
Aha. Well, this is WGTD and Education Matters show today. We are talking about equine-facilitated learning with our guest, Stephanie Kubarth, who is director of the Midwest Therapeutic Riding Program, which is located in Paris, Wisconsin. And Stephanie, an impressive background, very, very education-focused and rich. And you were mentioning something about the funding sources. So if someone did think that they could benefit from this programming for their child, because you work with ages
3 to 21.
3 to 21.
Well, yeah, I have some start as young as 2.
Wow.
You know, that's kind of on case by case. Sometimes their little systems just can't handle it yet.
Sure, sure. And the horse is too big, for example, for maybe their legs or something of that nature. But as far as the funding is concerned, how does somebody take advantage of this program, and do they just get in touch with you, or come out to the barn and say, I think we'd like to do this? How does one start and get involved?
I recommend going to our website, and from there it gives you more information about funding, that type of thing. We'd love for people to come out and visit, but you know, just give us a call or email us to make sure we have extra staff around.
Mm-hmm.
To give you a good tour, because usually when we're there, we're busy with our kids, but all of our riders do tend to love an audience.
No doubt. Yes, they're entertainers.
Yes. But as far as funding, we have quite a few that do private pay. There are different funding sources in the community that sometimes cover it. We do have scholarships available.
Okay.
Right now with the transition students, the 18 to 21-year-olds, happy to say Johnson, SC Johnson just gave us a grant.
Wonderful.
We just found out. And we get grants sometimes that help fund things too.
Super.
If they're still the 18 to 21 and they're getting funding from IRIS, we have riders that get funding from that also. But, you know, of course, it's case-by-case situation with their caseworker. And
absolutely. Do you bill then IRIS yourself, or is this the IRIS program?
We have staff that will
bill
IRIS.
Okay. And I will – you just mentioned it. So tell us and the listeners specifically about your program staff, what roles they perform and their training and qualifications, because I happen to know insider information that you have a tremendous level of professional credentials that are part of your volunteer staff. So if you could go into that a little bit, I think it would be very, very helpful.
Volunteer staff. Oh, my goodness. We have wonderful volunteers. If you ever want to meet wonderful teenagers, too, come to our program. We have the best volunteer teenagers. We've had a lot of them win. I have to brag about one, Jacob Wolf. He got a Mayor's Youth Award and won an Easter Seals Award due to his volunteer service this year. So very proud of him. So we have principals, doctors, vets that volunteer, our staff. We all have to get special training. Myself and Wendy, we're registered with the Hippotherapy Association. I'm also board certified with the Hippotherapy Association.
And what are those certifications so that the listening audience can know if they heard a title? Which one is yours specifically?
Hippotherapy Clinical Specialist.
Okay.
So I'm like one out of 20 OTs in the country that have that.
Wow. And how many programs of this nature are there in the country?
Probably about 800 now.
Wow.
If not more. Then we have riding instructors and they get certified. Mm-hmm. One of ours, Katie, had won Riding Instructor of the Year for our parent organization, PATH International, which is Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship.
Okay.
So she won that. We've had three riders win Rider of the Year internationally, which has been exciting. And our horses are little stars, too. I think four or five of them have been Therapy Horse of the Year.
And one of them is, in fact, your signature fundraiser of the year, which you just had a couple weeks ago.
Goody.
The Goody Memorial.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was actually her registered name, Goody. And she lived to be 33 years old.
Wow.
She's also been inducted into the Equine Hall of Fame, too. So she was just one of those horses that everybody started on, and her name was Goody, and she was just the best.
Wow. And then there's another fundraiser in March.
Yes, March 21st this year. Temple Lipizzan Farm is gracious. They host it for us, and it's at their farm in Wadsworth, so we get a private Lipizzan performance, and usually a few of our riders put on a demo, and then we're shuttled up to the guest house for reception.
So for the listening audience to understand, this is not something that one goes into lightly. It takes a tremendous amount of financial resources, certainly, as well as, I would say, a Christmas list or a want list, a need list, whatever you want to call it. On an ongoing basis, of course, paper towels are huge.
Yes.
If people were interested in donating, is there a certain kind of grain that you need or food products or just what for the horses? What's the big need?
Purina Senior Equine.
Because you have older horses.
We have a lot of older horses,
okay.
And that is quite the popular feed.
Okay. All right. We have covered a good deal about the program staff. I know you have some teachers out there also.
Definitely.
I can't imagine a program that's made up of such highly qualified professionals across the board. And that's, I think, really, really remarkable. And I also believe, and I would say further, that that's a real feather in the cap to the community to know that such an incredibly well-qualified organization and with this level of resource exists so locally. So where are the students coming from? I mean, are they all just from Kenosha?
No, Kenosha, Racine, Lake County, Milwaukee County, Walworth County. So, okay. Southeast Wisconsin, Northeast Illinois.
Okay, so primarily local area, but it's not restricted simply because you're performing services here. You don't just have to be from Kenosha.
No.
Okay, so they're coming from quite a distance. They could go to other programs, but they select yours. And I think for obvious reasons. I'm looking at some of the other questions that I had thought about, and we do have opera coming up fairly quickly here, so this will be a shorter show. But what are some of the specialized deficits that you treat that the community might want to know about or might not be aware of, besides balance and fine motor control and speech issues? I think it would be important for people to realize some of the, therapeutic needs that are met through your program.
Social skills is a big one.
Sure.
Huge. What's wonderful about using a horse in social skills is the horse is in the now, the now time frame. They don't remember, they're not thinking about, the other horse kicked me at breakfast this morning or something. They're in the now. So the riders, when you're grooming the horse, you look at the horse's body language. If those ears are back, you're brushing a spot that horse doesn't like.
Uh-huh.
So that's just a really good way for them to learn to read body mm-hmm. language and social skills, and just working with the other riders, all the volunteers, the staff.
And the communication skills are very important. Horse doesn't go unless they ask it to go.
Oh, so we get a lot of spontaneous speech. We just had one a couple weeks ago. Mom said it was the little guy's first time. He doesn't talk unless he's super motivated, and nothing motivates him. He talked the whole time.
Yeah, couldn't stop him.
I think we found the right motivation.
Probably couldn't stop him. Yeah, what a surprise. Well, we are almost at the end of our time. I'm going to start to wrap up here. And want to thank certainly my guest, Stephanie Kubarth, a wonderful professional in our community, one that I've known for a number of years and worked in awe and admiration at this program. She is specifically involved, as I said, with equine facilitated activity, and as we found out, a very, very specific portion of it and aspect, therapeutic riding as well as hippotherapy. And her program is the Midwest Therapeutic Riding Program in Paris, Wisconsin. What is the number if people wanted to get in touch besides visiting you on the web? The phone number, or contact number?
Sure, 262-859-2240.
And visit MTRP, or how do we
Our website is mtrpincinc.org.
Okay.
But if you just Google Midwest Therapeutic Riding Program,
or even something close,
we will pop up.
A generic Google search will get you to it, as well as, I believe, there's a Facebook page.
We have a Facebook page, too.
And that would be an opportune way for people to become acquainted and get a little bit of a tour, so to speak, without necessarily driving out there, but it would be a great introduction.
Yes, and see all the crazy things, fun things we do on our Facebook page. You'll see how one of our volunteers, who was a former principal, brought in his guitar, and some of our riders were singing with him. So it's always something different.
And
you'll hear a lot of laughter when you come to the barn.
Intergenerational therapy for everybody. And
I think the staff, sometimes I wonder who gets more therapy out of all of this.
I would agree. And certainly educationally very, very cross-categorical with respect to the number of different disciplines that you address. So this has been very, very helpful. It's been very, very enjoyable for me. And I want to, again, thank our guest, Stephanie Kubarth. And this concludes our program today of Education Matters. And we look forward to seeing you next time, or hearing you next time, or you hearing us next time on WGTD. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org.
Support for WGTD comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. Andrea's, a proud supporter of programming on WGTD HD.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, honoring personal legacies in the circle of life. They believe that every detail counts and every memory matters. Piasecki Althaus is located in Kenosha on 39th Avenue, serving the community since 1931.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio.
We're live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Margaret Jontwaite. And today's Saturday matinee is Mozart's exquisite comedy, Le Nozze di Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro. Maestro Edo Devart leads our dynamic cast, featuring Erwin Schrott, Danielle Denise, Mariusz Kwiecień, and two network broadcast debuts, Rachel Willis Sorensen as the Countess Almaviva, and Serena Malfi as Cherubino. This is the new production by Richard Eyre that opened the Met season in the fall. During intermission, we'll take you backstage for interviews with our stars. Stay with us.
This performance is being broadcast live over the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network, sponsored by Toll Brothers, America's luxury home builder, with generous long-term support from the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and through contributions from listeners worldwide.
I'm Margaret Jontwaite. Commentator Ira Siff is with me, and we haven't heard The Marriage of Figaro on our broadcasts since 2006. That makes it a real treat, doesn't it?
Oh, Margaret, what a feast. It overflows with sublime music, wit, humanity.
Well, Mozart based it on a provocative play by Beaumarchais in 1786, not long before the French Revolution. Our production by Richard Eyre updates the action to the early 1930s, also an era in Europe when they were facing big changes.
Well, the story is full of antics and intrigue, but rooted in real emotions, as well as timeless issues like class conflict and gender inequality.
Let's talk about the characters. Figaro is one of the most famous figures in opera. He's a valet, and he's engaged to the maid, Susanna.
Right, now they're sung by a bass baritone and a light soprano, and they're smart, lively, lovable characters.
And their employers are the Count and Countess Almaviva, baritone and soprano. They've been married for a few years, and he's no longer faithful to her.
Well, he's a charismatic figure. He's psychologically very complex. The Countess is usually sung by a full-voiced lyric soprano, and she gets two of Mozart's most ravishing arias.
The other principal role is Cherubino, the page boy. He's at an age where he's in love with every woman on the planet.
Well, this is a field day trouser role for mezzo. Two famous sexy arias, lots of cavorting.
And there are also great supporting roles. Marcellina is an older woman sung by a mezzo who's determined to marry Figaro herself. The backstory is that she lent him money with the agreement that if he couldn't repay her, he'd have to marry her. She's helped by an old enemy of Figaro's, Dr. Bartolo, a bass, of course. And there's Don Basilio, a character tenor.
And he's the local music master, but his real function is gossip and busybody.
We're going to hear the first two acts now, no intermission. Here's the synopsis. It is a rather complicated one.
Well, Margaret, the play on which this is based is also known as The Crazy Day.
That's right, so don't worry if you don't catch all the details. Figaro and Susanna are looking forward to getting married, but the Count is determined to bed Susanna first, so they need to outwit him. They also have to find a way out of Figaro's debt to Marcellina. The page boy, Cherubino, comes to Susanna but hides when the Count arrives to proposition her. Then the Count hides when Basilio shows up, but when he hears Basilio gossip that Cherubino has a crush on the Countess, the Count bursts out in jealousy. Even worse, he discovers Cherubino hiding right there in her bedroom. Figaro leads in a chorus of adoring peasants to try to pressure the Count to perform the wedding immediately, but the Count puts it off and gets rid of Cherubino by ordering him to join the army. In the next act, we meet the Countess, who's heartbroken by her husband's infidelity and agrees to help Susanna and Figaro. They come up with a scheme to disguise Cherubino as a girl for a rendezvous with the Count. The ladies are having fun with the page boy when the Count arrives, and poor Cherubino has to hide again. The Count hears him in the Countess's closet, but she claims that's just Susanna in there changing. The Count goes to get tools to force the closet door open, taking the Countess with him. Well, once they're gone, Carabino makes his escape out the window, while Susanna, who's been lurking, takes his place in the closet. So when the Count and Countess return and open the door, there she is. Then Figaro bursts in, and then the gardener, who whines that someone jumped from the window and flattened his flowers. Figaro says he did it. The Count knows something up, but he can't prove anything. Finally, Marcellina, Bartolo, and Basilio show up with a court summons for Figaro, so the wedding is now definitely postponed as the act ends. So, Ira, all the details and nuances that I'm leaving out will come in through the music.
Well, the librettist Lorenzo da Ponte described this opera as a virtually new kind of spectacle. Now, conventional operas would have used recitative to move the plot along with arias and ensembles to reflect on situations and emotions. Nozze di Figaro took things to a new level. Recitatives themselves are so expressive. The arias convey every gradation of the character's feelings and those ensembles. Mm. They manage to advance plot, illuminate characters, and pour out an endless stream of melodic riches. Mozart's genius is just overwhelming.
And we'll hear that from the first bars of the famous and infectious overture. Mm. Now, the set for this production is a manor house near Seville, intricate Moorish latticework walls. It's on a turntable, and it does a full 360 right at the beginning. We'll hear, in order of vocal appearance, Erwin Schrott as Figaro, Danielle Denise as Susanna, John Del Carlo as Dr. Bartolo, Suzanne Menser as Marcellina, Serena Amalfi in her network broadcast debut as Carabino, Mariusz Kwieciń is Count Almaviva, Greg Federle is Don Basilio. The first two acts of the opera performed without a break. Act two, we'll hear Rachel Willis Sorensen, also in her network broadcast debut as the Countess, and Philip Kokorinos as Antonio. The cello continuo is David Heiss, and harpsichord continuo, Brian Waghorn. The concertmaster is Laura Hamilton, and Edo DeVart leads the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and chorus in the first two acts of Le Nozze di Figaro live from the Met.
Thank you. Se quel letto che ci destina il conte farà buona figura in questo luogo.
In questa stanza?
Certo, a noi la cede il generoso il padrone.
Io per me te la dono.
E la ragione?
La ragione.